Along those lines, on page 7, Mr. Bolus was concerned about items related to the estuary that did.
recognize you as the chair.
Okay. Sure.
I would like to welcome everybody to the Health Commission meeting of the Health Commission of San Luis Obispo County. Just as a few housekeeping items is, if anyone in the public would like to make public comment, we would ask that you would email that to mcoughlin@co.slo.ca.us. Copies of the agenda are available by simply Googling San Luis Obispo Health Commission, and you'll be able to access our agenda packets and also minutes of previous meetings. Or you'll have a link there that you'll be able to see video of previous meetings also. To members, I ask that if you want to speak on a topic that you indicate by raising your hand, if you have a video, please verbally indicate that you would like to speak and wait till the chairperson, Mary Jean Sage, recognizes you. And once again, thank you to the Health Commission, and I will pass the meeting along to our chairperson, Mary Jean Sage.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you all for being here with us this evening. Again, it is our October 19th, 2020 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. I will ask Mike if you can kind of monitor if commissioners wish to speak. I'm on my small device tonight and I can't see everybody, so let me know, please, if they want to. It is the time in our agenda when we will invite public comment because we don't have a public before us this evening. Is there any public comment that has been submitted prior to the meeting, Mike?
No public comment.
Okay, good. Well, let's go to our first topic on the agenda this evening. We're delighted to have with us Christine Gager, who's the Communicable Disease Program Manager for our Public Health Department, and she's going to tell us about the flu vaccine programs that will be going on soon, which, of course, this year with COVID is more important than ever that we get the message out there and we all get our flu vaccines. So, Christine, go ahead and thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Yeah, we are at the County Health Department having a public point of distribution drill, which we have every other year. But what's different this year is we're having a drive-by. So it will occur in the Walmart parking lot in South County and the old Kmart parking lot in North County. It will be on October 21 from 12 to 5. This is the first time we've done drive-by. We have SOPs for those drills normally, but not in this setting. It's very labor intensive with a driveway as compared to being in a building, but we have a lot of community partners that are joining us to do that. It's open to the general public. Kids two and older can get vaccinated. There'll be four drive-through stations and then a family station at each site. And those children will be out of the car, not in the car. The nurse isn't climbing in there with them. We also are doing flu vaccines for seniors at this point with the high-dose flu at our three public health clinics by appointment. After the drill on Wednesday, then we will be opening up to the general public for by appointment. By appointment visits for their flu vaccine. We were allocated about 3,700 doses this year from the state. We are also have hired a flu coordinator to help coordinate the flu vaccines for the schools and from our other community partners that might need help vaccinating underserved, like we'll be going to Sunny Acres, the homeless shelters, etc. And schools the last couple years have kind of trailed off a little bit, but this year we have a really large number of school nurses that are interested in offering flu vaccine to their families. So we'll be partnering with schools to get that done. And this drive-by this year is a way for us to practice for if and when the COVID vaccine comes next year. We plan to dispense it in that same modality. Any questions?
I will start with a couple, and then Mike, you let us know if we have any others. So the drive-by is not the high-dose flu vaccine, Christine, it's just the regular?
Correct, it's just the regular dose. And the CDC doesn't really recommend one over the other. They say just get a flu vaccine. So the high dose is four times the amount of antigen that's in the regular dose. And as we get older, after age 40, our immune systems aren't quite as robust. So every little bit of help we can get. But just getting a vaccine is the most important thing, not necessarily making sure that it's a high dose.
Okay. So in since schools, for the most part, aren't in session right now, how will we do the programs with the school nurses?
They are setting up communications with their families. We'll probably be doing it on the days. In fact, we have a couple already scheduled that they're doing either book pickup, assignment pickup, and or school food distribution time, okay. So that the families only have to come same number of times per week, not an extra trip.
Okay, good. All right, any other questions from commissioners?
I'm not seeing any right now.
Okay, good. Well, and are we using our medical reserve corps at all to help staff these food?
Yes, thank you very much for reminding me of that. Yes, for the drive-through, more than half our staff is medical reserve corps in various roles, anywhere from the medical personnel to the other staff that isn't medically trained, because we do need so many ancillary services. We're also using them at the school clinics. We've been partnering with the Medical Reserve Corps in Cal Poly since early September to do their flu vaccines, because with all that's going on with COVID in Cal Poly, they don't have the staff to be able to vaccinate. They bought 3,200 doses also, and we've been sending four people per week, Medical Reserve Corps staff, to work with them, deployed through our program.
Good. We've been keeping that Medical Reserve Corps busy.
Yes, we have. Between flu shots and swabbing, they're a busy team.
Yeah, they are. Okay. All right. Well, if there are no other questions, and one just came to mind, what's the messaging for the clinics? Are there flyers, or will there be public service announcement? How do people find out about that?
There's been quite a bit of social media publicity about the drive-through clinics, as well as, you know, calling the local health department, your pharmacy, your provider. And then also the school nurses are messaging that, and the two jurisdictions that are participating as task force leaders, Atascadero and Five Cities Fire, have sent it out through their communication network for those various jurisdictions to let them know that this is available.
And with those drive-throughs, what paperwork do people need to bring anything, or what paperwork?
Yeah, you can go online, and I honestly can't remember off the top of my head the whole URL, but and print out your paperwork. For those that don't, we will be giving them paperwork, a little cardboard back, and a pen, and they will only return to us the paper. for us, you know, to sign off on and make sure that they don't have any contraindications. But the other stuff, rather than a complex disinfecting process, you know, we decided to go the more disposable route, which maybe isn't always the greatest, but maybe the safest at this point.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you for staying over to be okay. with us this evening. Okay. Lots of good information. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Later.
Thanks. Now I'll entertain any updates on our previous meetings from any of the health commissioners that have anything to report. Do we have anybody that has anything? Jean, go ahead. Commissioner Raymond, unmute. Unmute yourself. There you go.
I just wanted to let you know, as far as vaccines, I know through Dignity Health, I did research that after we spoke last time, and through community benefits, I know that I personally am going to be giving some vaccines tomorrow at the different work sites, so that they already have contacts. We did that years back, and they were going to continue to do that. But in the hospitals, they were focusing on the hospital staff, and in the clinics, their staff. But pretty much the clinics they're promoting it. I've seen it online saying if you need any vaccine, you can go to any of the Dignity clinics. So just wanted to report on that.
Good. Lynn, what about Wilshire? How do they do anything for the people they work with, their older people especially?
Yeah, we have all the employees are in a program to receive their vaccine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I can't actually say for right at this moment, but I remember in the past when there's been an order, we have been able to also accommodate patients who are homebound.
Okay. Good. Mike, do we again this year have an order in our county that all healthcare workers must be vaccinated?
I think Dr. Rosen would be the best to speak on that.
Okay, good. You're right. He would. I forgot he's coming up next. So, okay.
And also, I believe Robert wanted to speak on this topic.
Okay. I, for some reason, can't see Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, I'm here, actually.
I see you now.
I just wanted to report on my two committee responsibilities. One is the Tobacco Control Commission. Mm-hmm. I was unable to attend the meeting last week, but I have the notes. The focus is, I think the focus is becoming very clear. It's an impressive group. And the main focuses for the coming year are going to be working with youth and youth education, developing a website for the coalition, which I think is going to be terrific. I've seen the early versions of it, and I think it'll be very informative and very useful and appropriate for guiding people to where they can get help. And then the third issue is that keeps coming up, of course, is Senate Bill 793, the flavored tobacco ban. And I know there's the tobacco industry is collecting petitions to get that bill removed from. To revoke that bill. And I'm wondering if anyone has any information as to the progress of the petition gatherers on that. It has the potential to be very damaging.
I don't have anything now, but I'll check with CMA and see. They sometimes will track that stuff. I can check and see if they have any info on it.
Okay. The other issue I have is Oceano Dunes, and the Hearing Board is having their annual meeting this Friday to discuss the proposed plans for the coming year. It's interesting that the first draft was considered quite inadequate, and a second draft has just been published. It seems to be very different from the original, and there's been no public comments so far by the Air Pollution Control District, except that they find it acceptable, but nothing from the Scientific Advisory Group. So all that will happen Friday morning. There'll be a public comment period, and then the hearing board will address the changes. It should be interesting and very telling.
At the ACPD, Bob, I read something yesterday about all of the smoke from the fires in the air. Have they said anything about that, or how dangerous it seems to be for residents?
I have missed whatever they published, so I can't tell you.
Okay.
I can tell you that we were in Mammoth last week when the air quality index was in the 300s and 400s, and 10 days later I'm still coughing. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure the impact was significant.
Okay. Lynn, did you have something? Go ahead, Lynn.
Yeah, I just had a question, Bob. Are those hearings broadcast or recorded or anything that we can see them?
Yes, if you go to the APCD website and go to air quality and then Oceano Dunes efforts, there'll be links.
Okay, thank you.
Good, thanks for keeping up with that stuff for us, Bob. Any other commissioners have anything from any of our previous meetings? Okay, is Dr. Rosen with us, Mike?
I am.
Oh, he is. There he is. The floor is yours, Rick. Go ahead.
Hello. So, I suppose I'll start with, Mary Jean, the question that you raised about flu vaccination for healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. Right? So, Penny had a discussion with both the leadership at Tenet and the leadership at Dignity, and based on their feedback, we decided to continue the policy that had been in place last year, which is essentially the mask or vax policy. So those who flu vaccination is presented as a requirement for those healthcare workers who opt to decline, then they have to wear a mask. Of course, this year, everybody's already in a mask. So the concern is that we may see a lower vaccination rate. But the idea is that within both the Tenet and Dignity health systems, the vaccination rates for flu have been very high, have been over 95% fairly consistently. So we'll have to see how that plays out. In terms of COVID activity across the county, we have seen somewhat of an uptick. Most of the activity has been either in the Paso Robles area or related to Cal Poly. Over the weekend, we did see our first case of a newborn diagnosed with COVID-19. There have been several COVID-positive mothers heading into delivery who we've been in consultation with OB units. But this is the first time we've seen a COVID-positive newborn. Other areas that have drawn our focus One is schools, which we talked about a bit last time, both K through 12, with more schools opening or submitting their reopening plans or having already obtained their waivers. We will see, including this week, schools reopening for at least some grade levels. And when I say that, meaning public schools. So many of the private schools have already reopened through the waiver process, but we are starting to see public school reopenings. In terms of higher education, the hot topic is athletics as well as the arts. So the idea is that those are considered higher risk activities. We've been talking to both Cal Poly and Cuesta about their plans for surveillance testing for those groups, both student athletes and students participating in the performing arts, particularly singing, musical ensembles, including wind instruments, marching band, those sorts of things. And the idea is that individuals participating in those activities, the current guidance when they're out of season is to test at a rate of 25% every week. And that's it. That's all I have to report at the moment.
Okay, thank you. So how are we deciding what schools reopen? Do they have guidelines they have to follow?
They do. So they have to, their reopening plans must first be submitted to their school boards for approval. And then once they're approved by their school board, submitted to us for recommendations and feedback.
Okay.
That's a bit different from the waiver process, where the waiver plans are submitted to us for formal approval. And then we typically, after a few iterations, will approve the plan. The reopening process does not require our approval, but we do provide feedback, and the schools are generally very responsive.
Okay. Other commissioners have any questions for Dr. Rosen?
Hello.
Hi. Can I ask a question? I have a couple of data questions. And I don't know if you're not the spokesperson for the entire public health department, but I just was wondering if you would be able to carry a message for me to the people who do the data. And that is that it's been frustrating at Cal Poly to not know the true extent of off-campus COVID cases. So Cal Poly is reporting campus health and wellness cases. The county's reporting higher ed cases, but in a general, like, combined way.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like that one bar, and that, you know, it's just one bar. It includes all of Cuesta and Cal Poly. And so what we're missing are the cases that are happening at, like, the vets hall, like, that are being tested at all of the off-site places. Mm-hmm. They're mostly our off-campus folks.
I'm wondering
if we could have a better breakout of those data so we could know more about what's really going on at Cal Poly, or maybe I should be asking more. I've asked Cal Poly to do it, but maybe I should be asking them more. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable request. So we're talking about, right, just determining numbers, and I think... So I can float that idea.
Yeah, it would just be good to know. You know, like we have an idea of what's happening on campus, but it's hard to mitigate if you don't know really the full extent of the picture going on and off campus. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. And then The other question I had is from a student related to Cal Poly again. Sorry, I'm sort of, that's where I am. So they were concerned that their roommate tested positive and they're quarantining, and that's good. But they think that their case was reported to their roommate's case was reported to their home zip code instead of this zip code. There's some way to make sure that that doesn't happen, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, so they're
data, you're saying for data counting purposes in CalReady?
Yeah. So because their insurance might be, like, you know, in Fresno or something like that, they think that their case got reported in Fresno instead of here. You know, if that's happening, like, is there some way
to make sure? So when we report data, so for our purposes,
right,
we count Cal Poly students as San Luis Obispo residents.
Okay.
When it's reported to CalReady, I think we have, it's a little more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's just based on their permanent address.
Right.
So we don't have much control over that.
Right.
But we do in reporting our data.
Yeah. I guess it might be just something to mention to the data team to have their eyes on it, maybe.
Yes. You know? Yeah, we're aware of that issue.
Okay. Yeah, and sorry, I'm super data focused.
Right.
I have one more question, not related to Cal Poly, but so, you know, I'm sure you all have read that the encampments are getting swept, both like the Las Osas encampment over the library and then the one off the Bob Jones Trail for their pre-winter kind of cleanups. And I wonder, regarding COVID, what the plan is for the folks that had been living in the encampments, whether you have, like, are you going to reopen the safe parking? Do you have any access to, like, the Project Room Key funds to help people get housed? Because the CDC guidelines really say you shouldn't try to put a whole bunch of new people into a congregant setting. So I just wonder what the plans are for the winter for the folks that are unhoused.
Right. So that is a great question. Those issues are being worked through now.
Mm-hmm.
We have been talking about warming centers and helping those folks get their plans together. We've also been talking about testing. So testing can be a challenge because transportation is a challenge. So we are working on that. We do have to make sure that individuals who are symptomatic, there has to be a mechanism for isolating them.
Right.
And Project Room Key has been a challenge. It's been a political challenge in working with the cities. So it's also a bit tricky because it's limited. So the funding is limited to individuals who are COVID positive.
Oh, so they have to.
Which really, right. And that creates some logistical issues. So. So you put your finger on probably the most challenging issue that there is and consistently has been. And we are working on the piece with warming centers and testing, and also sorting out trailers that we have available for isolation, as well as trailers at both the Echo and Prado shelters have a couple of trailers at each location available for isolation. And we're continuing to work through the issues around transportation of folks who are symptomatic. But that is definitely something that we are addressing. It's just a challenge.
Okay. So what about the safe parking? Is that going
to... So safe parking, there is a plan for... Yeah, there is a plan to, again, have a safe parking program. One of the factors is that the organizations that do work with the homeless population received a fairly large allocation of money to address these things like transportation and testing and so forth. So we're trying to work with those organizations to develop their plans for transportation and for testing and so forth. And we've already hosted a training session for self-testing, which would that would at least eliminate the piece of transportation to a clinic or a testing site. And then we could focus on the transportation to, say, a motel room or a trailer when isolation is needed.
Well, thank you. Thanks for working on that. I know it's super tricky. I was really worried seeing all of those sweeps happening just about...
Right.
Yeah. Everything, honestly. But thank
right.
you.
Yes.
Good questions, Candace. Thanks. Anybody else have anything for Dr. Rosen?
I believe Amy would like to speak.
Okay.
Hi, Dr. Rosen.
Hello.
Two questions for you. The first was about schools reopening. You mentioned that the schools don't have to go to the public health department in order to reopen, but you do look at criteria to review. Could you just go over sort of what you look for and what that criteria is?
So a couple things. One is schools must have submitted their plans in order to reopen. Sort of the one requirement is that schools must have submitted their approved plans while we are not in the purple tier. So there is a big rush right now for schools to do that since we're in the red tier at the moment. And thanks to the process that we've been through with the waiver applications, we have a fairly defined framework for schools to follow in terms of their plans. So we share that. They submit their plans. We review their plans within the context of the framework we have, and that is based on the various subject areas that must be addressed, have to have been addressed through the waiver applications. It looks very similar. And then provide our feedback and recommendations based upon that framework. And that includes things like, what is your plan for masking? What is your plan for testing? What is your plan for distancing? What is your plan for screening? Screening meaning symptom screening, either before or at school.
Do students need to be tested before going back to school?
Students do not need to be tested before going back to school, but there has to be a screening process in place, but preferably that should happen every day and preferably happens at home before the student comes to campus. There will be surveillance testing in place for school staff. School staff participating in in-person education. And schools have been struggling to get those plans in place. And that's basically it that I can think of.
What about disinfecting, Rick?
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the framework.
My second question was about polling, or polls and COVID. Mm-hmm. If you could just speak a little bit about what that's supposed to look like.
Right. So we we worked with Tommy Gong to help get PPE to the volunteers, the poll workers, so they have access to face shields and masks, which is a concern because many of the volunteers are 65 or over, and they have that. A lot of early voting has been happening across the hallway from where I am, and I've seen them wearing their masks and sometimes face shields, and so that's encouraging. And that's really, we also were involved in reviewing their plan or plans for the polling places. So that's involved things like physical barriers, distancing, wearing of PPE, sanitizing, all the usual elements. And it seems to be going fairly well. And the volunteers seem excited to get out and do something rather than just be stuck at home.
Thank you.
Good questions, Amy. Thank you. Anyone else, Mike?
Tamara, it looks like. Oh, sorry.
What, Mike?
It looks like Tamar has a question.
Okay, I've got a question. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, you're there. Hi, Tamar.
Hey. Thanks for all the great info, Dr. Rosen. We appreciate it. Just to piggyback off of Amy's questions about schools reopening, in terms of what, and I don't know if you can speak to it at all, but in terms of what you've seen some of the school districts and schools submit in terms of their plans, can you maybe share at a high level some of the sort of standard things that schools have committed to doing? I know that there are a lot of questions from parents who are trying to make decisions with their various deadlines that their school districts have imposed on them in terms of the various plans of, you know, half days and alternate schedules and all of that. But would you be able to share with us at a high level sort of what seems to be consistent across the board with what schools plan to do?
Sure. So all students and staff are required to wear face coverings while on campus. If either a student or staff is identified as being unable to wear a face covering for medical reasons, then they're directed to wear a face shield with a drape that can be tucked into the shirt. Distancing of 6 feet or more is required between the teacher and the students. Between students, the language is a bit more flexible in that schools are directed to and intend to allow for 6 feet of distancing between students where practicable. And if that's not practicable, to the extent possible, and also make use of physical barriers like plastic, plexiglass, that sort of thing. Particularly when 6 feet of distancing is not feasible. Other items that have come up, like Mary Jean pointed out, sanitizing is one. Generally, a lot of what we're seeing schools are planning on having to limit the number of students and or staff on campus at any one time. There, many of the models involve platooning. And if there is, say, a morning session and an afternoon session, then the idea is that the schools will sanitize between those sessions and then again at the end of the day. For it's a little bit tricky when it comes to activities like sports on campus. So that sort of thing is allowable, but outdoors and following both the youth sports guidance that the state has put out and the cohort guidance that the state has put out. So those sorts of activities have to be performed in small groups. And nothing that resembles what we would consider sort of scrimmaging can happen. So it's mainly conditioning sort of activities or practicing against air sort of activities that we're looking at in terms of sports. Many schools are struggling with that aspect because they don't have enough staff to work with smaller groups. What else can I talk about? Things like identifying sort of flow of human traffic, both coming on and leaving campus. So, and to minimize bottlenecks when coming on and off campus. Hand washing, so education for both staff and students around hand washing and sanitizing. And one other piece that's fairly important is that each school must identify a COVID contact for that school. And that's important for us. So that would be our go-to person for communication around isolation and quarantine and sorting out, you know, if, say, a class has to shut down, that's where we can make those decisions quickly and enact them quickly. Those are, I suppose, the highlights that I can think of offhand.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Just a couple more questions. I know that there are some schools that are considering going back before the holidays, others holding off until after the holidays. Is public health department providing any sort of guidance there in terms of it being just generally cold and flu season and, you know, having schools potentially start right before or right in the middle of that?
Right. No. So the reopening, so really the only limiting factor in terms of reopening is related to what tier we are in. Okay. So if a school is planning on opening after the winter holiday, then they would still need to submit their plans now. But the timing of reopening is really left to the schools.
Got it. And then my last question is, given all of the additional requirements and the limitations to budget that schools have, are there any public funds available at all to schools to help with these increased measures with, you know, additional, you know, sanitation resources and that sort of thing?
Yes, there are funds available, but the details of which I'm not familiar with. Okay. There are funds available. In addition, CDPH has worked out a plan working with Quest to allow for surveillance testing of staff that is payable through the health insurance that school staff, that covers school staff without out-of-pocket costs to school staff. So that was a fairly important development because we were worried that that private labs would charge copays, and that would not go over well for surveillance testing. And that, I would say those are the more relevant points in terms of funding.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dr. Campbell had a question. I don't know if you still do.
I may have asked this last month, Rick. I'm not sure. Well, two questions. One is, when a school applies to reopen, is there any investigation of the ventilation in the various rooms?
So we make specific recommendations around ventilation. The schools are conducting those. Many schools are hiring services to check out their ventilation. One challenge in that area is that there's been a big run on MERV 13 filters, which are the recommended filters for HVAC systems in the context of COVID. So to a large extent, those aren't available. So the direction has been to use, you know, the highest level filtration that you can, and to also consider standalone HEPA filters that can be moved around and so forth.
Does a school have to meet any particular standards in terms of ventilation?
No, we just provide the guidance.
Okay. And then a broader question that's kind of hard to formulate, but it seems like our nation is doing this massive experiment with kids going back to school, mm-hmm. with really varying degrees of surveillance, variable resources in virtually every school district. But is there any large effort statewide? I doubt nationwide would do it. But statewide or large universities, et cetera, is there any effort to try to aggregate the outcomes of this huge experiment that we're doing with our kids? And when I say experiment, Rick, I want to emphasize, I don't say that critically.
Right. So
the necessary thing we're having to do.
Right. So much of that data will be collected through CalReady. We have had to build a data infrastructure to keep track of. So we will have to, in cooperation with the Office of Education and various school districts, sort out when and if we would have to shut a school down or potentially even a school district down because of disease activity. So because of that, we will have to monitor the disease activity at each school. So we've built, in the process of building the infrastructure to do that, to track that data. And we are working on obtaining all of the necessary baseline data for that. That can be a bit of a challenge because, as Tamar was suggesting, we don't actually know how many families are going to participate in in-person education. So we can get enrollment numbers, but the actual in-person education numbers are a completely different matter. So we're working on all of that, but on a state level, that data will be going into CalReady, and there are fields to track those who test positive by grade level. So it distinguishes between preschool and K-6 and middle school and high school.
Oh, that's reassuring. It could be a real shame not to learn from this.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you, Rick, and the health department for the Herculean effort you're making with so many obstacles and doing a lot of it on your own. It's really most impressive.
Well, thanks.
And we would all echo that. You guys are doing a terrific job. Thank you so much. I have just one comment to make, Rick, and it's on the school reopening. It's really not a public health issue, but it's something I'm hearing out in the community all the time. With the proposed platooning for some of the schools, will there be an effort made to get children in the same family going at the same time? This is a real issue for our parents out there.
Right. Right, that is the plan.
Okay.
But yes, it does. That presents all sorts of problems because scheduling, it's not helpful for a lot of families, I know.
Well, as Bob said, it's a big experiment. Really, right. We've not done this before, so we'll have to, you know, wait and see or whatever. Okay, finally, anybody else?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
One more question, actually, Dr. Rosen. I guess if anybody is watching in terms of parents, or if we can, as ambassadors in the community, sort of go out and spread a particular message in terms of parents and schools and children and making this decision, what do parents need to know in terms of risk for their kids and their families? What would be sort of like the top three pieces of messaging that maybe for anybody who's watching, or that we might be able to help message on your behalf as parents make this decision?
So two things are, one, it's important to cooperate with the contact tracers, and two, wearing face coverings. So just expect to wear a face covering and sort of, practice that behavior, encourage that behavior within the family and with students.
Good. You'll be on that, right, Tamar? All right. Well, with that, we will let you go. Thank you for staying and being
Thank you all.
With us this evening. So good. Have a good rest of your evening.
All right. Thanks. You too. All. Bye-bye.
Bye. So let's see if there are any health commissioner updates. Let's just kind of, I'm just going to call out some names. Amy, anything from you? Nothing? Okay. Commissioner Raymond? Jean? Unmute. We can't hear you. Here she goes. There you go.
I just want to get my piece of paper out here so I can...
Oh.
We had the Adult Services Policy Council met. And there were two speakers. We had Tommy Gong talk to us about what's happening with the elections, and it was really refreshing to see that our county is on top of everything. He had great statistics, and just like, you know, Rick was talking about, I mean, they're ready to roll, and, you know, there should be no issues whether you mail them in your ballots or whatever. And he said if anybody else wants him to speak, he'd be more than happy to, and I've seen him on TV too. He's just reassuring our public. The other speaker was Alyssa Hendry. She was from the San Luis Obispo County Behavioral Health, and she was talking about Suicide Prevention Month. And so she kind of reviewed all the different resources that we have in our community, and that was really, you know, just something to be aware of, and, you know, it was very informative. And, you know, we have a good group of people that meet, over 45 people were participating in that meeting. So I think the election was part of it, but we have a lot of connections for not-for-profits, and that's the positive thing. Anybody have any questions about what the group is doing other than that?
Okay, thanks, Jean. Anybody else have any updates? I'll add just one.
Candace, I believe, would like to speak.
Okay.
So I have an update.
Can't see you somehow. I can see you.
That's
now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You're not missing anything. So I have an update from the Opioid Safety Coalition.
Oh, good.
So they are conducting a drug take back event on Saturday, October 24th, this Saturday. That will be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you can bring prescription, non-prescription, whatever, just no sharps. And so that will be in the San Luis Highway Patrol parking lot. Socially distanced and everything appropriate. And the Naloxone Action Team has been working with Cal Poly and their Innovation Hub, which partners with Amazon to make a naloxone app. So an overdose response app that you could load on your phone that would tell you how to respond to an overdose, where you can get naloxone. You know, it would walk you right through the response, essentially. So they're in development. I've been on that action, those meetings, and they're really long, so I might stop going. But I'm happy that they're doing it. I'm just really busy. And the Amazon people talk a lot. So that's happening. And then finally, a lot more outreach to the encampments with naloxone and sharps removal. So both trying to get as much naloxone out there as possible to anyone who needs it. And then sharps containers to folks so they can clean up their syringes. That is it.
Good. Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Mary Jean. We did have a message from Ginger. She was attempted multiple times to join in. She was having some hardware issues with her mobile device, so she wasn't able to join us today.
Okay. I saw her leave. I didn't see her come in, but I see that she did leave. So, all right. I have just a couple of things.
Mary Jean, I do after you're finished.
Okay. Go ahead. Why don't you go first, Tamar?
Okay. Just a quick update on the IPVC task force. They met last month. It looks like shelters, at least as of last month, were just about almost full. For the county, Caps Low has seen about 50 to 60 referrals a month come from social services, specifically for parent education programming. They're seeing a lot of co-parenting issues and arguing that's going on. Thankfully, they've seen a slight drop in restraining orders after it has skyrocketed. They are also providing, as the Caps Low is also providing, the child care centers are fully open, serving the essential workforce. They're following stringent protocols there. And the one other sort of piece I wanted to mention is that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And for anyone that is in need of help or services as a result of what they're experiencing at home, can call and contact RISE in San Luis Obispo. And their 24-hour support line is 855-886-RISE. That's 855-886-7473.
Good. Did they meet via Zoom?
They do, yep.
I think everybody is now. I'm glad you were able to attend it. Zoom sometimes makes it a little easier, quite frankly. Really?
Yeah.
That it does. Okay. I just have two things. The from the Tobacco Coalition, we got a flyer today. The Stop Smoking classes are beginning again. They're going to be on Zoom. They're on Tuesdays. There's one during the day and one in the evening. If you're interested in learning more about it, you can contact Public Health. My other Zoom meeting was the Disaster Healthcare Coalition meeting. We did talk about the flu clinics that Christine talked with us this evening. One of the other things that the coalition is now working on is getting ready and doing our planning for when we do get a COVID vaccine. How much are we going to get? How are we going to distribute it? They have put together somewhat of a plan. Of course, we don't know when we're getting it, but who they will distribute it to first. And so basically, it's our first line workers, our healthcare workers, our first responders. They'll be getting the first amounts when it becomes available. Then they're working on a distribution chain, if you will, as to know where we will be going with that. There were a lot of agencies that were part of the meeting earlier this month. And Robin was there from Behavioral Health. There's been a little bit of a challenge with Behavioral Health. There was not one facility in our state that would take a COVID-positive Behavioral Health patient. So they had to do some scurrying around to take care of those. So they've been very busy as well. We are using our Medical Reserve Corps very efficiently and very often. They are helping with all kinds of things. They'll be helping with the flu clinics. They've been helping with the flu shots at Cal Poly. Some of them have been doing some contact tracing as well. So we are, number one, fortunate to have as large a reserve corps as we do. And we have kept them busy during this time. So Karen Jones was part of that meeting. We had her remember with us last month to talk about the long-term care facilities and what was going on with them. So as you all probably know, they are starting to let some visitations go on. And a couple of the other facilities that were part of the coalition were talking about how they were trying to figure out ways to have more outside visitations, and so they were trying their best. Very well aware that families wanted to see their loved ones and that, so they were doing the best to work with them. All hospitals were actually there and part of it as well, as some of our surgery centers also. They all seem to have the supplies they need right now for PPE and everything. And then one of the other questions that came up during that was, once we get the COVID vaccine, how are we going, what was it going to look like for patients that were in congregate care, including Atascadero, the hospital up there, CMC, and some of those. So it was a very informative meeting. And just as we are proud of our public health department for all they're doing, the disaster coalition has really worked well together, I think. So with that, one last thing. Thank you, Tamar, for taking care of the flowers for Dr. Bornstein. She was certainly appreciative of them. Our committee reports, budget, legislative. Amy, anything from the legislative point?
She indicated no.
No, okay. Community education. Candace, you did a little community education. Can you share that with us quickly?
Sure. So I've done one presentation at Cal Poly, and I'm doing another one this week about harm reduction around COVID-19, so how to mitigate risk, especially for college students, because those are the folks that I'm talking to all the time. So that this last one went well. A lot of questions about quarantine and how long to stay in quarantine and when to get tested when you're in quarantine, and just still some confusion around testing out of quarantine. People think if you get a negative test, then you're good, and that's not true necessarily. And then just like, yeah, so it was good, and I hope informative. And then this Wednesday, I'm doing another one, I think with Dr. Rosen or Christine, talking about college students' vaccines. So all of the ones that they should have gotten prior to college and that are important, like HPV and meningococcal vaccine, et cetera. And I'll probably also, because I'm on a little bit of a mission right now about herd immunity, since it's in the news so much.
Don't be poking yourself in the eye with that poker.
About that is not a public health strategy. We don't do herd immunity with a natural infection. We talk about that with vaccines. So anyway, hopefully that comes across as well in a more gentle way than I just said. And I think that's it. Tamara, did you have anything else to add to that?
Yes, can you share that presentation with this group?
Oh, sure. Yeah, totally.
That'd be great.
Totally. Yeah. I have a recording of the Zoom if you'd like to see the Zoom. And then I think the one on Wednesday will also be recorded. That's much more vaccine-centered, but I think it'll be good. Yeah.
When you have those links, can you give them to Mike, and then Mike can send them out to all of us, maybe?
Yeah, and for sure. I'll just send to Mike. Yeah.
So, and back to the whole herd immunity thing, do you think there's, it is an issue. I totally agree with you. Is there anything we can do educationally to bring that to the, you know, to everyone's attention?
I have been thinking about that, and I don't know that that's going to be an efficient use of our time. I don't know what you think. I've thought about it. Like, we could write a letter saying that we disagree with the Great Barrington, blah, blah, whatever the thing is. But I don't know that we want to get into it on that level. That's more of what they're doing is a political strategy. It's not public health. So I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, maybe we wait till after the election and then we see. Okay. Any other commissioners have anything to report?
I have a question for Michael. This is Jean. Has anyone said anything, sent, you know, a request for becoming a member of the Health Commission? Nobody's?
I have not received any new requests since the last few inquiries we had before the last meeting, but I never received applications from those inquiries.
Okay. This was checking on status. Thank you.
So we still have one seat that we need to fill, right?
Community member.
Okay. Good. So next month, our meeting is November the 9th. It will be virtual again. And I guess we could look at maybe, we fill our time though, if by the time we get an update on what's going on with COVID, and who knows, by November, we may be starting flu season already, we may be having more things to talk. So I think we'll hold off at least one more meeting before we actually schedule a full-blown presentation from anybody, if that's okay with everybody else.
I think that makes sense, especially, you know, for anyone whose time that we might be asking, it starts to become the holiday season in addition to the beginning of flu season. So it may be hard to get to control until after the holidays.
Although one of our topics we did talk about was food security, and it is kind of coming up to the holiday season. That's always a hard time, too. We might see. We'll, you know, think about it at least. So, all right. Well, thank you all for being with us this evening. If no one has anything else, I think we will stand adjourned. Have a good rest of your evening, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Tom.